Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
Now, how about some of the foreign players that speak the language more fluently? Who else should we be keeping an eye on besides the ones that you just named?
Obviously, you got Envy Park, who is the number two player in the world right now. She's currently injured. She has lower back problems, but that's someone that you definitely want to keep an eye on. I think that the tour is reaching the same stage that the PGA Tour has gotten to, where there's a lot of parity out there. We're beyond the stage where you had Annika going out and dominating week in and week out, or where it was Annika, Kari Webb, or, you always had one or two players who stepped up and dominated for a period of time. Lorena Ochoa during a period of time. We're to the point now where you have any given week 20 players who can come to the forefront and win. And I think that's great for golf.
Well, all right, now teach us something, okay? I wouldn't quite say we have parity in golf, because we still have a small core of, perennials, at least right now, names that will rotate into the top. Let's call it 6 or 7 guys. I've never believed that we had to have a Big 4, Big 3, Big 5, have that number be static. But there's always a number of guys that are at that highest of the high, the pantheon. Now, with the women's game, why is it not better to have a little bit of dominance by a pantheon so that you have more name recognition and perhaps more ardent fervor of the fans to get behind somebody that's going to be there every week instead of somebody that might be there occasionally?
Well, I mean, I think you do have that. You have, just look at this last week's leaderboard. You had Lydia Ko, you have Brooke Henderson. Both of them are 18 years old. I mean, the number one player in the world right now is 18 years old. She's been Rookie of the Year, Player of the Year. She's won the last two race to the CME Globe. She's the fastest player ever to get 10 wins. Her career is nothing shy of historic. And the fact that it doesn't get more coverage and more recognition outside of our game is astonishing to me. So you've got those two players in their early teens. As I mentioned before, please watch Injie Chun. She is absolutely a tremendous athlete. Se-young Kim, I think, is the best athlete on tour right now. She's 21, and I actually had an opportunity to work out with her. We were together in Korea last year, and went to the gym together, and she walks in and jumped up and did 10 pull-ups as a warm-up. I mean, just looking at her like, okay, this is a league that I don't need to be in. she doesn't present herself as being a tremendous athlete, but there's no question she's the best out there. So I think we'll vie for the number one player in the world.
Now, they're going to need it, because the U.S. Open this year is going to be the longest U.S. Women's Open in history. It's going to be held at the Cordoval Resort out in California, not far from L.A., in wine country. Now, you and I are both intimately familiar with it. I am, because I went out there last November and played and dissected the golf course. You, because not only have you done that, you've also got some good stories about it. So first, tell us a little bit about what the girls are going to face at Cordoval, and then tell us a little bit of interesting stories about how the place got built.
Well, look, I mean, there's going to be 4 series. You're right, it's going to be a bomber's paradise out there. Now, I do expect the USGA to move it, to reconfigure and to do some things to make the golf course a little more palatable to the women's game and a little more interesting coming down the stretch. They'll move some tees up. They may create some new tees. They may do some things that they always like to throw in a drivable 4 at some point. I expect that to be the case again this year. So I really think we're going to have another tremendous U.S. Women's Open that's going to come down the stretch on a beautiful golf course. There's no question that it is this is going to be one of the most scenic and spectacular courses that the women have ever played. So I think on that front, the beauty of California is going to be on full display.
A completely different kind of beauty, though. It's not the rugged coastline of Pebble Beach, and it's not the charm of San Francisco. It is wine country. The girls are going to love it because it is a pristine spa resort. They're going to get spoiled and pampered, and you know, they're going to fall in love with the place. And it is beautiful playing amongst the vineyards and the ravines. The length of the golf course is going to play 6,700 yards for the women, and that's long. Okay, I remember, you know, when I was growing up, it was a 6,000-yard golf course for women was long. And you'll see as you look on tees that, you know, the average ladies play somewhere between, you know, just under 5,000 and around 5,700 or 800, on the average. So this is going to be the equivalent of, you know, a 7,300, 7,400, 7,500-yard golf course that the men would play. You know, it's by Robert Trent Jones Jr., who is both a friend and a client. We love Bobby. We have him come on the show an awful lot. And Bruce Charlton came on and spoke about what it was like trying to, you know, design that golf course. I think that people will love it for its accessibility as well. It doesn't show you anything you've never seen before, but what it does show you, it shows an excellent presentation.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, the wine country of California is some of the most beautiful landscape in the world. Particularly, you know, in the late afternoons, the shadows start falling out there, and the vibrant colors that pop out there year round. I think it's going to be they're really going to they're going to showcase that very well. And the fact that it is in California, which will push the television times later on the East Coast, I think you're going to attract more fans. Being able to watch great golf at a tremendous venue.
Now, if there's one knock on the resort, it's that it is extremely pricey. And I have to say that I'm concerned because there's this trend, you know, golf was suffering quite a bit and we needed to raise rounds, but we are seeing a lot of very expensive resorts pop up. Stream Song 2, wonderful golf courses, fantastic, top-of-the-world golf courses, $500 a night.
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, Jay, because Port of All, when it was originally put on the drawing board, was supposed to be an affordable public golf course. And here's why. They when they originally designed or had the concept to build a golf course out there, there were a lot of environmental exceptions that the state of California had to provide to the developer in order to get the thing built. There was a salamander out there that was on the endangered species list, and you know they were going to go in and eliminate the it may have been a frog. I'm sorry, it was some small aquatic creature.
Tree frog of some sort.
Yeah, they were going to end up having to displace and perhaps kill a few endangered species out there. They were also going to have to to do some things with some wetlands that would normally be frowned upon, moving them around, taking out some environmentally sensitive areas. A lot of things that normal developers would never be able to get away with doing. But the part of the pitch for this was not only are you going to be able to create jobs in this area, but this is going to be a recreational facility for the people in this area. They're all going to be able to come out and play. It's not going to be that expensive.
It was supposed to be Rustic Canyon.
Yeah, exactly. It was supposed to be something where the average Joe could go out there and enjoy a round of golf. Well, it was never going to be that. It was always going to be the resort that it currently is. It was always going to be the $500 per night, you know, luxury spa resort. And they simply snookered the people who provided them with all of the permits in order to get this done. And a lot of the listeners may be questioning, well, gee, how could something like that possibly happen? One of the original investors in the property was Nancy Pelosi's husband.
I'll just let that sink in for a moment.
So there's that.
It sounds very similar to what happened in my beloved hometown in New York City when Donald Trump got involved in Ferry Point. You know, Ferry Point was supposed to be a $60 to $80 golf course so that everybody could go play. And then after the mafia sat on it and trucked dirt back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for 13 years, I must say Trump, when he got involved, got it done quickly. And the golf course is quite excellent. But, you know, now it's a $200 golf course that you can only play on certain days. And, you know, that's not how to grow the game.
Nope. No, it's not. I mean, you have to have that $30 product out there. You've got to be able to go somewhere and plop down $20 to $40 and be able to play a round of golf. Otherwise, the generation that's growing up now, the millennial generation, they're just not going to do it. It's not, and in many instances, it's not because they can't afford it. Some of them, particularly in California and in Silicon Valley, are quite wealthy. They simply, you know, if they're going to spend that kind of money, they're going to go surfing. You know, they're going to go skydiving. They're going to do something experiential. They're not going to go plop down that kind of money to go play around the golf. It's just something that, you know, it's either got to be something really special for them or it's got to be an affordable time to go spend with friends and family.
Now, on that note, I have a question related to that about the LPGA Tour. You'll notice that the beginning of this year and the end of this year, all of a sudden it goes from, you know, being the courses in the United States. You start out in the Bahamas, and then you go next up are Australia, Thailand, and Singapore. And then later on in the year, you've got England, Brazil, Canada, France, China, Malaysia, Korea, Taiwan, China, Mexico, all in a row. How do the lower tier players afford the airfare and the travel and the expenses to, you know, jet all around the world?
Well, most of those events are invitationals, particularly the ones later in the year. You actually have to play well enough throughout the course of the year to get the invitations to go to Thailand, Korea, Taiwan, that latter Asian stretch, Japan. But there's a stipend. The sponsors
being able to do that.
Precisely. When I went this year, I went both Seoul, to the Seoul event, and then on to Taiwan. And, you know, there were great accommodations that were made. I mean, the hotel couldn't have been better in terms of the setup that they had for you there. Transportation was great back and forth. And of course, the fan base that turns out for this thing makes it well worth it. I mean, the sponsor is certainly recouping his investment. Because the people come out in droves. It is amazing. If you've never seen what happens when the LPGA goes to Asia, it's, you know, you think you know how big it is over there. Until you see it, you really have no idea. It's the equivalent of a Saturday afternoon college football when the LPGA shows up in particularly Seoul.
But hang on one second. In the SEC, that's something like an 80, 90,000 person game.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, it's easily had. I mean, we're out there on in Incheon, which is where the golf course is in Korea. We're out there on a Thursday morning. Every hole is five deep. I mean, the gallery, it looks like Sunday of a major championship. It's again, until you see it, you really cannot imagine. And they're not grandstand sitters. The Asian fans walk every step. In most instances, they run. So you just have this mass of humanity running from shot to shot out there. It's something to see.
Sounds like me trying to dodge everybody when I'm running one of my half marathons or something. Seriously, okay, 16,000 people ran the Boilermaker Road Race last year. I must have spent the first mile and a half not running over people or getting run over. And I remember at one point I had to climb a little bit of a hill to get around a bunch of people. And as I'm coming back down, it's some poor girl thought she saw the same empty space as me. And the two of us crashed into each other. Luckily, neither one of us went down. But, you know, they won't be doing any running if any of those people go to Augusta National, though.
That's right.
No running allowed. Now, we're getting close. You know, it's not going to be very long before we're all down there having our wonderful dinner on Wednesday and raising our glasses to our colleague George Pepper, who won the Lifetime Achievement Award, and all of the other writing award winners. What do you foresee for this year's Masters?
Well, I think it's going to be incredibly exciting because of the play that you're seeing out of the top names in the game right now. I mean, I think you're going to have Rory McIlroy and Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler and Bubba Watson back in the mix again. And when you have names that people recognize, personalities that people know, it creates great drama. And that's, you know, that's what you hope for in any major championship, particularly at the Masters where it's such a familiar atmosphere.
I'm going to go out on a limb right now, barring anything unforeseen. I'm going to call it. I think Jordan repeats.
Wow, that's an amazing call. But look, I mean, he is as comfortable out there as he is anywhere else in golf. And if he is rolling the putt the way he is, you know, the way he can and the way he has in recent weeks, I would say, yeah, you're probably right.
Now, the other thing that I wanted Ray to watch out for, though, and we have to keep an eye on this, is it still astonishes me to this day exactly how far that Jason Day hit some of those drives at Whistling Straits, completely dismembering the golf course, tearing it limb from limb to the tune of 20 under. You know, I'll never forget my very well-heeled and smart friend, Chuck Cordova, turning to me and saying, my God, this is supposed to be a hard golf course. Mm-hmm. You know, what did you see out of Day over the winter?
He has gotten nothing but better. Quite frankly, I think if he had a weak spot, it was perhaps his wedge play. And I think his wedge play has improved over the course of the winter. He's really, believe it or not, he's because he doesn't give this impression, he's really into statistics, and he has studied his numbers. He knows what the areas which he was perhaps a little weaker this year than he's been in times past. And I think that he has worked twice as hard and doubled down to make sure that he is in the conversation every time he tees it up.
Now, we're starting to run out of time here, so we got a time only for just one more question. Preview the majors for us. We're going to go to my favorite, Oakmont, and then we're going to go to Royal Troon, a wonderful course in Scotland for the British Open, and we're going to close the major season at another terrific American venue, Baltusrol. Tell us a little bit about what you foresee at those three venues.
I'm just so happy that we have classic golf courses at every one of these spots now. I mean, you were always going to have it, with the Open Championship and Augusta National. Those were always sort of given. But you know, the U.S. Open and the PGA could throw a curveball at you every now and then. And, you might get something that didn't necessarily match the golfer's eye, but these venues are so wonderful, that I think it makes the best players play their best. And because you got classic old golf courses, they don't need to be tricked up. It's just peg it up, go out there and play. You may see a scoring record if the winds are calm at Troon. But I love this rota of major championship venues.
Well, Baltusrol actually has a habit of surrendering low scores, too. It traditionally gave the lowest scores in the U.S. Open along with Congressional. Even though it is sort of disguised as this brutish beast, Oakmont is Oakmonster. No one conquers Oakmont. You survive Oakmont. And so I am excited to watch the guys, you know, skate around an ice field without falling through. Or it might be kind of fun to watch some of them fall through. Like, I don't know, maybe Robert Allenby. Just kidding. So tell us where we can read all of your stuff.
Well, the best thing to do is to go to globalgolfpost.com. It's a free subscription. It comes into your inbox every Monday morning, and it covers, it basically covers the globe. I mean, we take the global part of the name very seriously. So it's a weekly news magazine that comes only in digital format. And it's a great way to kick off your week by getting caught up on every activity that's taking place in the game. You can also follow me on Twitter. My handle is at JS Eubanks. So if you're interested in seeing my stuff, go there and go to Global Golf Post and read everybody else's.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us. It's been phenomenal having you on the show. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back soon with another Jay's Play Show. I am Jay Plummer, and you are listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Play Show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.